When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to Your Mom is a Podcast. In this
special podcast,
Your Mom, you know what?
Your Mom's a Podcast. Yeah, Your Mom's a Podcast.
Here we interview incredible people and their moms to be like, excuse me, how did you do it?
I'm Sundeep Parikh. You're
Milana Vintra.
And we're both two LA-based comedians and actors, and we're also new parents, and we need help.
So we're going to talk to people who are incredible and inspiring and change the world, crack us up, all of the above.
And learn to be better parents. And also learn to have some compassion for our parents.
Yeah, who maybe did some things a little wonky or a little perfect, because look at us, we turned out to be perfect people.
So welcome to Your Mom is a Podcast.
Oh, baby, oh, baby, oh, baby.
Is this an original hit? Or is this?
This is how I'm coping with my stress. Is just humming the things that are in my noggin.
Yeah,
I am. I know I'm not appearing put together, and that's because I'm not put together right now.
Yeah, come as you are. Your Mom is a Podcast. This is a safe space for me and you to be who we want to be. You're about to go on a huge trip. I mean, it makes sense. You're like, all the last minute pieces are coming together, right, for this adventure.
Yeah, there's really nothing. I mean, I'm not anxious about packing. I'm like, I don't have like anything I need to put together. I'm going to like go be an actress. They're going to tell me what clothes to wear. I could wear sweats every day and it doesn't really matter. It's just leaving my kid. I'm like, I'm actually quite having a hard time with justifying this career path of like, wait, what am I doing and for what and how much am I getting paid for it and how does that balance out with the childcare that I'm going to need?
Just to remind folks like how real this is, like how big this is. I mean, this is a big movie. This is a space movie with Ryan Gosling, right? You can say
I'm
that?
Going to go do a big space movie. And like, I have a very small part in it.
Okay. There's no small parts. There's no small parts, as they say.
Only small hands. I just feel like there's nothing anybody could say that would make me feel just even a little bit less anxious around about being away from my kid.
Yeah.
And when like people I work with have asked me if I'm going to bring him with me, I just say, no, I'm pretending I'm a dad. I know so many dads
Busted.
Who are so good at leaving for long periods of time. And maybe it's a practice thing. Maybe it's culture. I know that it was.
It's definitely culture. I mean, like, I mean, watching all the shows growing up with like the dad's back from a business trip. And like, I feel like that was like so many episodes.
And that was my dad.
I don't know.
How are you feeling? Let's distract me. Let's do the age-old parenting hack of distraction.
Yeah, for sure. Like, who do you want to hang out with right now, Milan? Do you want to hang out with Batman, Superman, or or Phil, the guy who brushes your teeth? Those are the three people that you can hang out with. That's what I always do. That's my go-to. Is like, do you want to hang out with Leo the Lion? And then,
and then you become those characters?
Yeah, I become those characters. So that's my move.
That's so nice.
If when all else fails, it is, hey, do you want to talk to somebody else about this? And that's in the form of characters that I will just play. And he'll be like, no, I don't want to talk to Leo the Lion. I want to talk to Bouncy the Frog. Well, I don't know if Bouncy's here. Let me check. Hold on.
I don't know. He might be busy. He's got something going on.
Yeah.
He had a meeting earlier. Let me check.
Bounce of the Frog comes. And he sounds like Jean-Luc Picard, kind of, or my version of Jean-Luc Picard. And he bounces in and he starts, what are you upset about, buddy? You know, and I have a conversation with him.
Sandeep, this is some of the best parenting advice we've gotten on this podcast.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah, because it's a thing that you have within you all the time. Something I do that's kind of similar, but I think yours is slightly more profound. It's a character named Baby Sniffer that lives in my son's shirt, and I have a Mama Sniffer that lives in my shirt, and yeah. I can just go.
Oh, it's like a creature that crawls
it's
around.
It's a little creature that's
in your
just
shirt.
My yeah, hand.
Yeah. The middle finger is sort of the
is a,
face,
is
like
a little,
little
head.
Dinosaur. Yeah, yeah,
and
I like
yeah,
it.
It's a okay. little dinosaur that I always have with me, and my son has one too, and my husband's is called Smeller. I don't know why he's not Daddy Sniffer. My son just
old
called
Smeller.
Him Smeller. Old okay. Smeller. Old Papa Smeller. And it's a toy. It's a character. It's a story that we have
yeah.
with us at all times that's
yeah.
super easy to pack and
yes.
is yeah. Is a great distraction. And yeah, maybe one of the lessons is if in doubt, play harder, which actually might be applicable
yes.
to us. Yeah. If in doubt, play harder. This is a good one to do that with because we have my friend Ben Sheehan on. He's a dad of a young kid. He's married to a really strong, really cool, really funny woman. And it takes about 4 seconds before you can get either really political, really deep, or do a bit. And
that's the best.
Yes, yeah, it's a wonderful quality. So this is Ben Sheehan. He's a former award-winning executive producer at Funny or Die, which is where we met. He's still award-winning, but he's just formerly at Funny or Die.
Yeah, they didn't strip him of you didn't strip you of your awards, right?
didn't okay,
not good. Yet.
but
they can come
pry he made
these webbies away from you with my cold dead hands.
This dreamy belongs to me now. yeah. Now he has pivoted into politics, which is where we became slightly closer. We started doing some like refugee advocacy work together and then a little bit of work around his company that he founded called OMG WTF, which stands for Ohio, Michigan, Chicago, Wisconsin, Texas, Florida, which are states that have some of the most ridiculously gerrymandered districts. And one of the things that the company did that I loved was create these pieces of jewelry in the shape of the gerrymandered districts, because you would wear it and people would be like, what is
what
this
is that?
Ancient symbol you are wearing around your neck?
So what's,
like,
what is
oh,
this
no,
room?
This is just, yeah, this is just a neighborhood in Georgia, actually. And so this company, OMGWTF, was designed to teach voters about state executive races. And this was in the 2018 midterms, where he also did a lot of work with Stacey Abrams. And now he is the author of a book called OMGWTF. What the fuck does the Constitution actually say? And he is a Hollywood Reporter listed him as one of entertainment's 35 rising executives under 35, which was what, like 25 years ago or something? Because he is, I think he's the same age as me,
face.
And we are rapidly in decline. And
I'm going for 60 over 60. That's 60. That's the list I want to be on. Right?
Yeah, I want to be one of those people that's like, keep going. I worked my ass off for the last 40 yeah. years and I finally made it. Never give up on your dreams.
I'm
there
the
goes
first
my teeth.
110-year-old series regular.
That's what we're going for. So, Ben, welcome to our show, Your Mom is a Podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. I was being quiet because I wasn't sure if I was supposed to chime in before the introduction finished. So I feel like I was getting a perfect view of you,
yeah.
watch you do bits,
you can do no
figuring
wrong.
Out if I can participate. Now I feel like I can.
So, Ben, you have an exciting new announcement. Tell us about this new project that you have coming out.
I am hosting, writing, and producing a show for PBS called Civics Made Easy, which is a deep dive once a week into a government-related topic. It'll be on PBS's, all of their distribution channels, social media, YouTube, all of wherever they are, this show will be. It's 12 episodes. So it starts, a couple episodes will be before the election, and then there's going to be a bunch in 2025.
What a wonderful Incredible. Collection of your skills and talents, Ben. You're like a little bit entertainment, a little bit comedy, a little bit educator, a little bit politics, and you come from a long line of people who have been in politics or adjacent to politics. We talked to your mom, who is extraordinary. Has she cheated and told you any of the things that we talked about?
I have absolutely no idea what you talked about. I did have to, when I did hear like a sound of panic. I mean, you talked to her a couple months ago, so I did hear a sound of panic when she found out it was video, because she hadn't had her hair done that day. It was like a it was like the alarms were going off in the house.
I think you guys were actually at the house when we did the interview. Like, you guys were like playing at, you went to the beach or something while I was talking to her. She's like, yeah, basically you're outside.
We were in lovely Rehoboth, Delaware.
Can I ask, just on a personal note, how your interest and devotion to making our country, our politics more fair has changed since becoming a dad?
I think it brings me back to what got me interested in this work in the first place, which is very directly related to my mom. So I think it fits that it's fitting that you've spoken to her already about this, because the same things that she started to instill in me when I was really young, I'm trying to do with my son. And I think one thing that I really appreciated about what she did, obviously my son is now too young for this, but she always treated me like an adult, right? She always asked me my opinion. It doesn't matter if my parents were having a conversation when I was 6 or 7 years old. They always treated me like an equal and wanted to know what I had to say and what I had to think. And so that really built a muscle and a feeling of an opinion being valued. And it gave me confidence, I think, is really what they did from an early age. And so I always appreciated that they did that.
How young do you think that started?
Honestly, like 4 or 5. I mean, I remember my mom would come home from work and literally start to give me civics lessons over dinner. She would write, draw the Congress on a piece of paper and write like the number 100 on one side and 435 on the other. And she's like, that's how many people are in the Senate. That's how many people are in the House. And I got these like private tutor lessons from a woman who was at the time working in the Senate, not as a senator, but for a senator. And so I was really lucky to get that sort of, devotion, attention, and just that she cared enough to, sort of teach me this information from a young age.
It is quite a sign of respect to talk to a kid like that, because, my kid is only 3, like similar to Ben, your son is like 2.5 now or something, right? They have such an insane ability to learn. So dumbing anything down feels like a waste of their sponge-like brain. And to know something and to bestow them with that knowledge is, honestly, it's quite basic common sense. It's like you have this superhuman ability to learn complicated words. Like, when my son would say like, oh, that's a tractor and that's a combine harvester, it's different,
right,
I'm like,
right.
You can learn so many more complicated things than we give you credit for.
Totally. Side note, I've learned a massive amount of round balers, square balers, combine harvesters, excavators. Like, my construction knowledge is, my son has taught me that. So I guess it's an even trade in some regard.
Yep. It's good. Like, it's hopefully taking the place of the part of my brain that has memorized all the Thundercats since I was, 11. So I'm hoping that that's a fair exchange, in terms of my actual memory. My question for you, sorry, I've been holding this question for a while, so hopefully it's still relevant, but this acronym, OMGWTF, is too perfect. Like, at what point were you like, you're like, well, actually, Wyoming is even more gerrymandered, but it doesn't fit the acronym. like, how did you nail this acronym so well?
It was, well, just to be clear, it was only for the 2018 midterm. So it happened to be 6 states that were in play for a variety of governor's races, secretary of state races, attorney general races, jobs that sound, I think, boring out of context, or maybe in context. But I wanted to do something that would protect the election in 2020. Because when I had this aha moment where I realized that a lot of the people that were going to be overseeing the election in Michigan, overseeing the election in Georgia, overseeing the election in these key swing states, they were up in 2018. And so if we like looking out, a lot of people were focused on the Senate and the House, and that's important, obviously. I'm not saying it's not. But looking out 2 years, who's going to be running the election and making sure that it went fairly and we can certify results in these key swing states? And they were all on the ballot and they didn't seem like they were getting a lot of attention. So I kind of wrote down a bunch of states that had these types of races on them, kind of pared it down to swing states. And then when I saw Ohio, Michigan, Georgia, Wisconsin, Texas, and Florida, and Texas isn't really a swing state, but it's had some much closer elections than I think a lot of people give it credit for.
I needed a tea also.
But I looked at those and I was like, that's a fun collection of states. I can't do that many states, but there's only a couple of races in these states. And so it was a sort of a marketing thing, but we got a lot of attention and support for these really key positions. And a number of our candidates won. And were helpful in protecting the elections in Michigan and Wisconsin.
The election. Incredible.
What incredible foresight. So do you have any aha moments around that now?
They might be depressing, but I can share them.
Yeah.
Let's hear them.
By all means, let's walk into our feelings.
Let's walk into our feelings. I am worried about two things. One is that I think a lot of counties across the country, because our elections are really run at the county level, even if we're talking about presidential elections and elections for House and Senate, it's really the counties that oversee them. And I'm worried that there's going to be a mass refusal to not certify the results in counties so that states then are not able to certify the election and not send their electoral votes to Congress. And if nobody gets 270 electoral votes, the House gets to decide the presidents, and they don't vote by member of the House. They vote by state. So Wyoming gets one vote. California gets one vote. Delaware gets one vote. And right now, Republicans control 26 state delegations. So if the election were to get to the House, Trump would have basically an automatic victory. So I'm worried that some states are not going to certify their results so that no one gets to this number.
I hadn't even thought of that.
And then the other thing that's really wacky is that in the Electoral College today, 13 states don't require the electors to vote for the winner of the popular vote. It's very unlikely that they would vote for somebody else, but in 2016, 10 people, 10 electors voted for somebody else who didn't win their state. And right now, the best guess for how the election is going to go is that Kamala Harris is going to win Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania. Trump will win Nevada, Georgia, Arizona, North Carolina. And that gives her a 2 electoral vote majority. So 270 to 268. So all you would need is one person to change their vote. Now, these are Democratic Party operatives, the electors. You know, they're chosen by the Democratic Party. Sometimes they're even chosen by the candidates. So if they were to change their vote, it would be a huge misidentification of somebody who's a responsible elector. Right. But it has happened. And I think this election is going to be really, really close in the Electoral College. So those are the two things I'm worried about.
Oh, those are the two things that I'm now worried about.
Yeah. And thank you for giving me new nightmares. So the second thing we can't do anything about. The first thing, is there any way that can be addressed preemptively?
Well, I think you would have to put pressure on your governor, your secretary of state, your members of the state house to certify the elections, even if some counties don't certify them. You know, there's, I think it's silly if Texas has, I think, 270 counties, you know, if two of them, and if they don't get their results in, I don't think that's fair to Texas to not have a say in the presidential election, and same for any other state. So I think it's putting pressure on elected representatives, but you know, it sort of goes to show that this weird system of different layers of government, levels of government overseeing our elections, I think might be surprising to a lot of people. I think they think, oh, the presidential election, well, the federal government handles that. And it's, you know, but they don't.
No, it comes down to like the PTA leader from your county or whatever that's actually like volunteering to help the election.
I actually will give listeners, because this is coming out before the election, so there might be still time for people to volunteer at polling places. And that's a super important thing that somebody can do and offer their time to help out on election day and make sure, you know, that the lines are moving and people are able to vote easily. I think that's a super important thing because a lot of polling places are short-staffed and they need help.
That's a great call to action.
Yeah.
That is totally applicable. I will be looking into that. Thank you, Ben.
Powerthepolls.org is where you can sign up. It's a nonpartisan organization. You can just check it out and they can put you at a polling place.
Power to the polls?
Powerthepolls.org.
So we asked your mom, what is it that made life in politics so appealing to her? Do you know why she got into this whole rigmarole to begin with?
My mom has an almost compulsive need to help people. And it doesn't matter how big or how small. I think she gets satisfaction from knowing that other people are at peace. And she does that in her own life with people. Like, she's always checking on people. How are you doing? How are you? Are you okay? She's truly the most selfless person I have ever met. She it's almost to a fault. Like, she almost doesn't care enough about herself, but she is really going around her day, the world, trying to make sure everyone is okay and is fine and has what they need. And she volunteers for so many different organizations. She's constantly doing volunteer work. And I think something, I think she's had that her whole life. And I think that's something in government about that on like a giant macro scale, being able to help a lot of people has appealed to her and is what got her involved. But.
And how do you think then that has informed her parenting to encourage you to think beyond yourself? Because you are actually quite similar, just like as a friend and a host, at, like your house, you are quite a caretaker to your friends and family. So I wonder, again, this is like, you know, kind of a parenting advice podcast, but what did your mom do to encourage you to think beyond yourself?
I think she showed me the results of some of the things that she was doing so that it made it, I guess on a macro scale, she would do things like, you know, she was responsible. She doesn't take credit for this, so I want to brag about her, but she was responsible for getting, you know, ironically talking about PBS, she was the person in the 1980s who helped keep them on the air. She was the person who fought for them to have money in the budget for Sesame Street, for Mr. Rogers, for any programming that you saw on PBS, Corporation for Public Broadcasting, because in the 80s, there was a huge move to cut these channels and these programs.
Yeah, right.
And her argument was, well, there are a lot of people that don't get quality, a lot of kids that don't get quality education. So as long as they have a TV with an antenna, they can get quality childhood programming. And so she fought for the money and the budget. And so as a fan of Sesame Street when I was a kid, she explained this to me and she was like, this is available. And so everyone can learn in the way that you do. And so I was just stoked to keep having my favorite shows on the air. But it was making these specific sort of, this happened and like, this is available. This happened so that I knew that it was possible. I know that's a strangely, an oddly unique example, but it was just
like she showed you cause and effect.
Exactly.
Yes. Yeah. And I love, I mean, what's making me a little emotional about this is that now you are going to have a show on PBS that like a seed that she planted 30 years ago is coming to fruition now. I mean, has done so much good in the world in so many ways, but that it's directly affecting you and that you now get to do good work and make positive change because of it. Like, what an incredible ripple effect. So let's hear what your mom said about what she did to encourage you to think beyond yourself.
Well, we always wanted them to be curious about the world. We wanted them to experience some travel, being around people of all kinds, being respectful of people, no matter who or what they did, or family, friends, or relatives, or helped us in some way with work, or we also challenged them to find interests that they could be passionate about. It's really important to have causes and passions and go with it, assuming it's a healthy one. And in their case, in Ben's case, it was music and sports, as well as an awareness. They were always aware of what I did and what their dad does, and their dad's work takes him into interesting places, and he's worked with a number of political people at some pretty high levels. And we've exposed them to that whenever we can take them to meet somebody famous or somebody who has a very important government job to understand what that was. So there were many trips to the White House when they were little.
That is true.
Wow. You know, at first I was like, I didn't hear Save PBS in there, but I did hear, you know, like them just teaching you about, you know, what they were doing and the cause and effect of that. So I, you know, gold star to you. Well done. You guys did match up there. I, you know, what's it like to hear your mom in this moment?
Well, I hear a lot. I would say in this context, it gives clarity to why they would take me to so many places that I thought I was confused as to why I was. Like, you know, I had this very unique opportunity. This is going to kind of come off as a little like nepo baby or whatever, but by the nature of my parents' work, I got to go to like every Democratic convention since I was alive, and I was way too young to understand what was going on. But my parents would always try to get politicians to like talk to me and explain what they did and like why they were doing what they were doing. And I think that they come at government as, from a really young age, I was shown that, yes, obviously government has problems, but I was shown examples of government effectiveness. Like the first thing I saw was that government is a tool to better people's lives. And I think if you polled a lot of people right now, they wouldn't say that. They would not say that government is a tool. So I've seen firsthand examples of somebody that didn't get any credit in the press or like any stories about like PBS gets to keep the lights on, or you know, my mom helped convinced her senator to appropriate the first federal funding ever for AIDS research in like 1981 before they knew what it was. And so there are just these examples of having that foundational opinion toward government and toward the people who work in it maybe gave me a really positive view on it, because I at least know that it is possible to really help a lot of people. And that's why it was designed, even if it isn't always doing that today.
To affect real change. It turns out it's way more boots in the ground, people advocating for things that they really believe in and care about, and rallying community around that and rallying their voices together to push for what they, you know. So you really saw that firsthand. And I love this idea of, like, you know, in terms of how this would apply to me as a parent, I'm already thinking like, oh, I love this idea of having the people that he is exposed to engage him directly. Like, go ahead and be like, hey, you know, whether it's a director on set or whatever, be like, you have like 2 minutes to tell my son what you do and why you care about what you do. I love that. That's such a cool little thing to be able to offer.
My most prized possession of anything that I own that is a physical thing is a hard drive with all these videos of my dad coaching politicians going back 35 years. And he would have them do a special message at the end of his training sessions for me and my brother. And so I have personalized messages of advice from John Lewis, from Ann Richards, from Bill, former president. It is like an unbelievable thing, because he's training them for their speech at the conventions and, you know, in 88 and 92 and 96. And so at the very end, they're on camera. The camera's rolling. He's like, would you give my son is 8. Would you give it you know, he's into X, Y, and Z. Would you give him up some words of advice? And I have these amazing videos of people that are no longer with us, but these legend, I mean, the, you know, Ann Richards was, you know, governor of Texas, this like incredible, incredible woman. John Lewis obviously is incredibly well-known civil rights leader.
Wow, John Lewis message? That's insane.
Yeah, he told me about how he used to practice, get over his like stage fright of public speaking by practicing speaking to his chickens. And that's what gave him the confidence to pursue being a pastor, is because he would talk to the chickens over and over. And
I mean, if you can hold a chicken's attention, you're doing something right.
As the famous phrase goes.
We asked your mom, who do you think, besides her, could take the most credit for you, Ben, you know, achieving the levels of success that you have? What do you think she said? Or who do you think she said?
I'm assuming she said my dad. I feel like... Well, actually, she either said my dad or my 8th grade English teacher. It's probably one of those. I'm not sure who.
And who do you think, besides your mom, could take them the most credit?
My dad or dad or my 8th grade English teacher, for sure.
Okay, let's hear what you
said. This must have been a heck of an 8th grade English teacher. Let's hear.
I mean, the obvious answer, and it's a true one, it's his dad. He's very much like his dad in a lot of ways. Similar professional interests, but also their organizational skills. Ben is the most organized person, except for my husband, that I've ever known. So he clearly did not get those genes from me. I'm fairly organized, but not like that. He does have an innate ability to just see through a morass of issues and to just go right to what's important.
So sorry, Mr. Jenkins, eighth grade teacher. Nope, didn't make the cut. I don't know who your eighth grade teacher
is. But why was your eighth grade English teacher so influential?
His name was Clay Robertson. And in the sense of he was like, my parents treated me as an intellectual equal. He was the first teacher to treat me as an intellectual equal, but like in a really hard way. Like he didn't pull any punches. Like he talked to us like we were philosophers. And he talked to us like we were geniuses. We were impressionable eighth grade kids. And he also was, it was the first time that I kind of realized that maybe there are times the government doesn't have your best interests at heart. And we read novels like Fahrenheit 451 and discussed like Plato's Allegory of the Cave and looked at paintings by René Magritte and would be tasked to sort of find the commonalities and the common arguments in different forms of art over a period of centuries. And I feel like that was like my intellectual peak by far in this world was when I was 14 in eighth grade, because we're all wandering around quoting Aristotle and the rest of our teachers are like, what the fuck are these people doing? Like, but it was, I never honestly thought about it until this moment, but he did something very similar that my parents did, which is, again, there's an amazing line in, I think it was Del Close or someone, where they were talking about treat the audience like geniuses and philosophers, and that's what they'll become. Like when you're a performer, it's like if you treat the audience and you play to their intelligence, like it's going to elevate the laughs and elephant and everything. And I fear that that's what people were doing in my own life. They were treating me as something that I wasn't yet, hoping that I would feel like I could become that. And whether that was Kelly Robertson in 1998, 99, or my mom and dad, like they had a very similar approach in that way.
It's interesting. It's a kind of self-fulfilling prophecy where you treat a kid like they're special and then they become special. There's this experiment that I heard of a long time ago where there are two groups of college students, and one group is they both have a mice, and it's the mouse's job to go through a maze, and one group is told, you have a very special, smart mouse. And another group is told, you just got a dumb old street mouse that we found. Don't worry about it too much. And the group that had the special mouse treated it like it was special and held it in a certain way and placed it down in a certain way. Mm. And the group that thought that they just had an old dirty rat were like, you go on, figure it out. And because of the way that the mouse was handled, it performed better consistently.
Wow.
And you know, who knows how this was debunked or influenced or whatever, but I kind of love this in relation to child rearing. Like, do we treat our kids like, you know, I definitely have friends who refer to their kids as little assholes, and or they're being an asshole, or they're being manipulative, or they're being whatever. And sure, everyone can be an asshole sometimes, but
yeah. And to be fair, their kids are assholes.
But do you believe in your kids' innate goodness? Do you believe in their intelligence? Do you respect them? Do you believe that when they're coming to you with whatever their pain is, that it's valid? And maybe they don't have the toolbox to handle it because they're experiencing a flood of feeling or whatever it is. So I think there's something really valuable in this of like, you know, how do we treat them like they're little geniuses? Also, how do we treat them like they're little psychological geniuses, like that they are emotionally capable of doing big things and thinking big thoughts and accomplishing big things?
I've never heard of that experiment, but it makes perfect sense. And yeah, that's exactly right. It's even if it's something small, just trying that with your child over something small and just really, and I want to stress, like, I think there's a difference between like spoiling someone and telling them they're like the greatest at everything and giving them like a false sense of confidence, but just making them feel like their opinion matters and how they feel matters, and it's valid. And that is just such an important thing that I was lucky to have from my parents and from Clay.
But you bring up a good like flip side, right? I just wanted to like kind of add some darker lines to the gray area maybe on that, because like, you know, there is also the like filling a kid with like too much expectation to achieve or be the best or something like that. And I think that that's, it is more about being like, you know, hey, this is a safe place to express your feelings and to try things out, and you're safe with your parents, you know, as
and
opposed to.
And we love you even when you aren't accomplishing.
Right.
Exactly. We love you even when you don't achieve, because I got a 5-year-old, so there's a lot of like, I'm the fastest person on the planet, you know, and I'm just like, you are
really fast.
I was like, you are very fast, but there are many fast people, you know, and it's like, it's not about that. Like, it's about like having fun. Like, are you the kindest person on the playground? Mm-hmm. Like, that's what I want to know.
Because we are ranking the children here.
That's right. By kindness.
And it is public, yeah. And it will be around
Six
forever.
Times?
So
yeah, exactly. Anyway, whatever.
So one thing that I believe I've talked about on this podcast before, and I would love to gift to my son, because I don't have it. So I'm a dyslexic immigrant, and reading has always been really hard for me. And in my upbringing, like, reading was a thing that was like almost like shamed, not by my parents. But like in school, when I couldn't perform or I had poor reading comprehension or whatever. So one of the things that I'm really working to instill in my son is a love of books. And I think if he has a love of books, he can learn anything and do anything. And so, I know that you have a love of books and a love of learning, and I'm curious what your mom did that instilled that in you.
We read books every night. She would come home from work and we would read multiple books. I mean, when I think back on my childhood, it was books. I mean, I remember some toys and stuff like that, but the earliest memories I have are books. And we've actually saved a lot of the books that I read, and I've been reading them to my son and having these moments where, oh my God, I remember that. I remember that picture. I remember that part. I remember being scared by that part of the book where it's like a weirdly drawn clown or person that I kind of have that memory still. And seeing the other side of it has been really fascinating. But just caught my parents emphasize, especially my mom, like, you know, my grandma was a librarian. So like, that's where she got it from. And so my mom's mom was constantly around books. My mom is a total bookworm. And that was just my earliest memories. It was constant reading and different types of stories and series of books. And so I just had that around all the time.
Hmm.
Yeah. My wife's super good about having kept her books when she was a kid, and her and her brothers. And then we get these little inscriptions that are like, you know, this book belongs to so-and-so, my wife's brother or whatever. And it's like, and it's now gifted to my son's name. And I just like, that is such a beautiful thing to be able to pass down and share with your kids. It's so cool.
Okay. Let's hear what your mom said.
To find books that match their interests. When Ben was really little, he loved books about outer space. Also to make books kind of a special thing. Oh, you've been so good. Let's read a book. You know, you can read, let's read an extra book tonight. You know, making it something positive as opposed to, we got to read these books, you know, come on, we're going to sit down. You know, trying to make it something special and something we all do together. Go to the library and help let them pick out their own books.
Yeah,
love that.
You get to read another book.
Yeah, because my memory was always, we would do like five. I mean, it was like just a book after book after book. So, and that makes sense because a lot of my early books were astronaut books. My dad would do this thing where you can still do it, but he would sort of write this story and then send it off, and they would, like, someone would like publish a book, and there would be like pictures of me and my neighbors and friends, and we'd go on a space adventure. And that, the first time I read that, I remember being like, oh my God, like, I'm in space book.
So he wrote an adventure.
He would write a book. He would write a story, and then he would send it off to, there was a service, I guess, in the 80s where they would take your story and then they would format
customize
it as a kid's book. And then you would send the names of your child's friends. And so you'd all have helmets on, so you'd never see anyone's face. So it could be anybody in the spacesuit. And we'd all go on a space adventure together. And I just remember the first time, because I'm reading all of these stories about other people. And then I was reading one about like me and Charlie and Karen next door and Billy and Elizabeth. And we would all be going on this like space mission, and we'd have to solve some problem. And it was like,
holy shit, I'm in this story. Like, it was crazy.
Yeah.
And I did one for my son for his first birthday, whereas we were reading so many books and it was like a day. And I did one like, you know, a day in the life of Sandy. And he just was, I could see the kind of thing. He was like, oh my God, that's the tree outside. Those are my toys. And it's like seeing yourself in the thing is a powerful experience.
That's awesome. Do you have any, let's do a quick round of book recommendations. You have any that you're reading to your kiddo that
top
you
of mind?
Really?
I've gone back and read some of the Dr. Seuss books, and there's a range. There are some not great ones, but I will say Red Fish, One Fish, Two Fish, Red Fish, Blue Fish absolutely slaps. That one is like incredible.
I forgot how crazy that one continues to get as you get further along into the fish. Like,
it's
so
cool.
Out of control.
Just the scenarios are wacky like and wild. And just the, I've had such a respect. Anything by Sandra Boynton. Sandra Boynton is
is like a hero in our house.
Incredible.
Like,
she's a celebrity.
If we ever got to meet Sandra,
she's unbelievable. I mean, anything by Sandra Boynton.
Book is a real. It's like become part of the way we get dressed. So for those that don't know, the Sandra Boynton Oops book is about a creature. I think he's maybe a duck or a chicken or something that always puts on a pair of pants wrong, or he'll put his shirt on his legs, or he'll put his hat on his feet or something. And so whenever my son is having a hard time moving towards the next step of getting dressed, I could put his shirt on his head and be like, oops. And it's a sure giggle, because it feels like an inside joke. It feels special to us, even though it's a literary classic.
I'm going to throw one at you for as your kid gets a little older. You probably could start now, though. It's called The Panda Problem. And that one's really good because it teaches storytelling. So but in a really fun, engaging way, the narrator and the main character, the panda, basically have it out over the narrator's trying desperately to tell this story about the panda, but the panda's like, I don't have any problems to solve. And so it's taught, you know, my son that like, every good story needs a problem, essentially, to have a hurdle to tell the story. So it's a good sort of self-referential one about, you know, storytelling.
By Deborah Underwood.
Yeah, it's good. Good stuff.
I'm a big fan of Room on the Broom.
Oh, that one's money. Room on a Broom is great. Yeah,
they're
my
just
one
you know what's
too.
Great about them as a performer is
there
are
totally
lots of fun voices
to
do, and the rhyme is really satisfying. It's
the
got
rhyme is
a
strong.
Good rhyme.
Yeah. I will say my wife is sort of giving me looks, because whatever this is, like reading these books is bringing out some like buried theater kid inside of me. I feel like I was supposed to be a theater kid, and like I took the sports path instead, but like I was like, who are we kidding? And it's really been like trying out some accents and bringing it out for better or worse, but there's this like whole side of me that is like awakening.
Oh, totally
waking up from like decades of slumber that is like excited.
I bring
to
it out like it's a network callback, man. I'm like, all right, I'm doing it all. I'm gonna throw every voice I got at this thing. Amazing.
Okay, so we know that there are a million things that your mom did well. What do you think is her greatest win as a mom?
Her greatest win as a mom.
Where she maybe felt most proud, or that you feel like she really did it right.
I think her greatest win as a mom was, I would have to say, teaching us to think about and respect other people as much as, if not more than ourselves. And to think about what actions we're doing, how they're going to affect somebody else, and to think about people who didn't have, you know, the same opportunities. My mom was always trying to make things more fair, and to get us to think about if something is working for me, is it working for somebody else? Is it fair? Is what's making your life better also making somebody else's better? Kind of like a rising tide lifts all boats type of approach to everything. And so she really made us try to think about other people than ourselves as much as we could. And I just remember that from a very, very young age that that was always instilled in us.
I love that also as a way of like raising two white boys coming from a, you know, relatively privileged home of like, you potentially have this opportunity because of the circumstances and thinking about yourself as a member of an environment, not just, you know, you're not on a jet ski or on a boat and a rising tide lifts all boats, but like that's really wonderful. That's the thing that I think about a lot as I'm raising my future white man. And I love that. Let's hear what she said is a moment that she thought was her greatest win as a mom.
I think all moms go through so many different emotions all the time. We don't think we're good enough. We don't, you know, good enough moms. We always say other people, you know, do this a lot better. We think, honestly, every day my children make me proud. So I would think just the choices they've made in life have been good choices for them. And that makes me proud. But as a mom, I just feel very blessed every day that I have them and they're the good people they are.
I would say she gave a very universal answer. But she did talk about how you're a good person. And so I think we'll give you the point for that.
I'll take it.
So obviously your mom has done like a million wonderful things and is an incredibly accomplished person in her own right. But is there anything that you think your mom could have done better now that you are a parent and you're seeing how it's done?
Yeah. Got any notes?
Yeah. Got any notes or feedback?
I do. And I've told this to her before, so if she listens to this, it's not going to be a surprise. I had a really tough time in middle school, I would say that the end of elementary school, going into middle school, beginning of high school, I would say like years third or fourth grade through like 10th grade, honestly, 11th grade were like pretty rough in many, just bullying. And, you know, I was a pretty sensitive person. And this is something my mom really probably didn't talk a lot about, but, you know, the nature of my dad's work meant that he was gone all the time. And he was always home on the weekends and was always coaching our baseball teams and stuff like that. And we talked to him every night, but he was physically gone Monday to Friday every week, my entire childhood for work. And so I don't want to say I was raised by a single mom, but there were elements of it during the week. Monday to Friday, yeah. I was. And I do think that I didn't get a good primer on conflict resolution, or if somebody is like messing with me or giving me a hard time, like how I can stand up for myself. And so what happened is I would go home and I would be crying, you know, so-and-so said this and, you know, bullied me about this today. And she would try to solve the problem, but it made it worse. So she would then like call the kid's parent, like the kid who threw a football at my head in seventh grade, she'd like call his mom. And then the mom would tell him, and then that football would come from multiple directions next time. There was one part of the conflict revolution.
Yeah, kids, like my mom told me that, you know, it was wrong of me to throw that football. I just want to say I'm really sorry that I did that. Yeah. That's probably was never coming
to play. So her trying to solve that problem created new problems. And so I definitely had like a reputation as a child as like a softer person. I wasn't able to really stand up for myself. I was very, very sensitive and emotional. And it's not that I think those things are bad. I just wish I had sort of learned a little bit more of how to handle myself and fight back with confidence in those moments. And that's definitely something I could have used.
What advice would you give that kid now in terms of how to handle it? Like, what have you learned as an adult that you wish you had known then?
I learned this kind of firsthand where I was having such a tough time, even like into 10th, 11th grade, that there was a moment where I just stopped caring. It almost like it was getting so bad that it just broke. And I just said, you know what? I don't give a shit. And I think people can sort of sense when you have confidence. And like, weirdly, it got so bad that suddenly I was confident. It was almost like I was almost like disassociated from how bad it was. And then suddenly people were coming up to me and be like, you know, you seem different. You seem like, and then I started getting treated
better. And then my senior year was like the best, one of the best years of my life. And just like everything clicked. And so I rode that confidence into college. And it's been a pretty relatively smooth sailing for me since in terms of self-confidence and worth and socially. But I would say a good 8-9 years were really bad. And so I think that not giving people the satisfaction that what they're doing to mess with you is affecting you, because at the end of the day, that's what they want. They want to know that it's having an effect. And if you don't show them, or if you just like don't give a shit and kind of ignore them and just not let it get to you, they want that reaction. It's the same reason people type crazy things in comment sections. Like, they want you to respond back. If you don't respond back and you put them on restrict or whatever, they're not getting what they're looking for. And so that, I think, is a really important thing. It's hard, obviously.
How do you think you found that? It sounds like you sort of found that on your own. And I know that you were like at this sort of place where it's like, couldn't get any worse, so you said F it. But I don't know, like, how did you, digging a little deeper, maybe getting a little more psychotherapy into it, like, where do you think you found that resilience?
I had outlets where I was able to sort of succeed based on merit. I mean, honestly, sports was like a huge one for me. Sports, it was like, there was a level of confidence that I had on the baseball diamond that I didn't have in my daily life. And because I was good, people respected me and treated me differently. And even in music, especially, my mom says sports and music. Music was I was a different person on stage. It just tapped into a different part of my brain. So there were pockets of confidence there. It just wasn't in my normal social life. So I kind of found a way to tap into these areas and bring them off of the field or off of the stage and into my normal life. And it had an effect. And it also, I would say that coupled with just like kind of giving up, just like not, at some point, it's just like the dam broke. And I was just like, I don't have any more to give about this.
Yeah.
And it just kind of happened.
I wonder how like third, fourth, fifth grade Ben could have applied that. Like, you know, when that's happening, you know, if that were to happen to any of our kids, how we could be useful to them. And I can totally see why your mom is like, well, that boy's mother must just not know. And because if my boy was doing that, I think I could have a conversation with them. And, you know, I totally see how she responded the way that she did. It's also part of her like believing the best in people. Like part of her outlook is so much of like, well, there must just be a problem at home, you know, like that must just be a thing that we can solve. Let's hear what your mom said about a time where she feels she could have done better.
I think Ben might agree with this. I'm not sure. Never sat them down like some of our friends and discussed financial management, you know, and the economics of investing and life. And we just didn't put that a priority on that. And the kids, you know, kind of caught up to it on their own.
I think that's a great answer. My thought on it and how it ties into your note that you gave your mom about like effectively trying, you know, don't try to solve my problems for me. I think if maybe if I'm reading the note behind the note, it's like, equip me with the tools to help me solve my own problems. Don't try to solve them for me.
No, I think that's absolutely a through line. My honest to God, the second thing I was going to say was exactly what she said. Truly. I was deciding between, I was like, which one is, I was like that the thing, because it was over a real period of time and it was something that was like really left a deep impression on me.
Most parents don't, I think. I mean, or at least of our parents' generation didn't really do that. I mean, in my experience. So
they didn't. And I think that when I look back on the things that I think are missing from our education system, like number mm-hmm. one and two are civics mm-hmm. and financial literacy. And luckily they 100%. Did. I didn't learn government in school. I had half a year in eighth grade and I went to school in DC. And I had half a year in eighth grade. We were literally miles from the Capitol. So I didn't get an education about something that was very close by in school. It was only because of my parents' jobs and just them talking about it and teaching me. But in the same way that other people may not know about government because they didn't get that education, like I didn't get that financial literacy. And it wasn't something that they prioritized that I study in school. I really did like economics when I took it in college. I almost minored in it, but it wasn't something that I regret not making it more of a part. I was a big math person. That was like a huge thing that I was focused on and did well at, but I never applied it to finance, and I should have.
Yeah. I wish I started on that Roth IRA way earlier.
Oh, yeah.
Well,
way earlier.
Well, I will say that, you know, again, because I was raised by immigrants, there were a lot of lessons that weren't covered in my house. And I learned a lot from TV. I learned a lot of moral lessons and a lot of applicable skills. And so in that way, I will say I'm so happy that you're about to have a show about civics. Because what we are not covering in school, we will be covering on PBS. Thank you.
So we asked your mom, like, how did you prioritize the health of your marriage while being a working mom? And maybe you can speak to, I mean, you can try to predict your answer for sure, but also just like what you think is sort of important in that while being a working parent, you know, for yourself. And, you know, of a toddler and trying to make sure your marriage stays healthy. How do you guys tackle that?
My parents growing up thought that they were being discreet when they were being incredibly obvious about many different things. So yeah. One thing that they like went out of their way to do was to show affection to each other. They would always hold hands, you know, they would hug, they would show physical affection with limits, obviously, like while my brother and I were around. But also when they would have arguments, they would whisper. But my mom has a really loud whisper, and I don't know if she's aware of that. She has to be. And my dad does too. And so they would go to like a separate part of the room or the house and like think they were having a conversation, but we could clearly hear what they were saying. And so the effort I think they were trying to make was, I think it's good to show affection in a healthy marriage. And then, you know, I know what they were trying to do, but also I think it's okay to show conflict and like work it out within reason. And, you know, obviously they weren't like screaming at each other. They weren't insulting each other, but they would get in arguments. And so I do think that that's something that my wife and I are conscious of, is that we, you know, if we're getting into a argument or debate or back and forth, like when Sandy is around, we try to model good behavior, conflict resolution, stuff like that. We do show each other affection, although he's at the age where he's angry that he sort of seems that like him and I are competing for my wife's attention and time. And we are.
Yeah.
So but he notices that. And so he'll kind of get angry if like I'm hugging or, you know, kissing my wife, and he'll like try to get in between us or try to like join the hug. And so it kind of becomes like it was also very much like this with my dog. When she was around, we would compete for my wife's attention. Yep. So but I do think we are conscious of the fact that, like you said, Milana, our kids are sponges and they are soaking everything in, whether we realize it or not. And so we should be aware of that and try to model good behavior even in small moments.
Well, cool. Let's hear what your mom says.
A friend gave me a book called How to Stay Two When Baby Makes Three. I remember the title. It sounds trite, but obviously to make time for each other, you know, to no matter what, you know, maybe try to take a little vacation. In fact, I was a little annoyed at my husband one time for surprising me with a vacation and he worked it out with my office. And I said, "What? You're taking me away from Ben?" It was only Ben at the time, but he was very happy with his grandparents, so it was okay. And once I got on the plane, I was fine. Once I got on the plane, it was like, what child, you know? But just occasionally, really find time for yourself and put the guilt aside, because a loving relationship, a strong relationship is so healthy for the kids to see.
Yeah. So you're like model conflict resolution, and your mom's like, get the F out of Dodge. Just get out.
I am making plans after this podcast. I am going to book a weekend.
No, but it's true. You know, we only have so much time and energy, and our kids take most of it. And so that means that it is being taken away from other things. And our friendships are take a big hit. Our relationship takes a big hit. Our work, you know, I was really interesting talking to your mom, because she is such a present mom. She obviously took parenting so seriously. She knew the responsibility, and and cross the finish line with great success. And so I'm like, okay, great. And then how did you also do that while working? And then how did you also do that while maintaining a healthy marriage? And so I love that a part of it is like, well, you can't do all of the things. You can't be a 100% present parent and a 100% present wife. Sometimes you need to take some energy away from your children and put it towards your marriage. And like she said, you have to step away from the guilt, which is a big, annoying, built-in motherhood quality, which I would love to just take a pill to get rid of.
Turn off.
Yeah. We're going to move on to the lightning round, which is short questions, short answers. We're going to do a quick compare and contrast. This is your opportunity to earn 2 points per answer. I would like to remind you that the points are useless and don't matter, but Sandeep really likes this game, so we keep playing it, and that is the compromise we make in our relationship.
But I suggest you do call your credit card company and see if you can turn them in for like frequent flyer miles. Give it a shot. I mean, I don't know, it might work. All right. So far you got I believe 3 gold stars. That's what I have on my.
That can't be right. It's definitely got to be more than that. But again, who cares? Moving on. First question is, what are 3 adjectives you would use to describe Ben? What do you think your mom said? I want to also tell you that she says like 7 of them. So you'll probably get a few right.
Yep.
Assertive, curious, organized.
Thoughtful, determined, stubborn, loving, kind-hearted, funny, compassionate. Oh, and did I also mention stubborn?
I'll give you stubborn as a, I guess, assertive is the nice way of saying stubborn.
That's so funny. I got two stubborns. That makes sense. I mean, my mom and I would, you know, in the spirit of allowing me to be a part of conversations early on, obviously when I got older and became a teenager, those opinions became expressed more forcefully at the dinner table, and we would really go at each other. My brother and my dad would kind of just sit back and be like, we're not a part of this.
I love that.
So it became a debate stage.
Yeah, 100%.
Dinner time, basically.
100%.
Yeah, yeah.
So fun. Amazing. What good training.
All right. We asked your mom, what's your favorite color? What is your favorite color?
Blue.
Probably Dodgers blue.
Ooh, is it Dodgers blue specifically?
I mean, it's in that area, that family. Yeah, for sure.
Okay, we'll give it to you. Mm-hmm. Well done.
If you could have any superpower, what would it be?
Read people's minds.
Predicting the future politically. Because it drives him crazy with not knowing what's going on and the work he does.
Although you have been pretty good at predicting the future politically, which is terrifying.
Yeah. So just be Nate Silver, basically. All right. If your mom could have a superpower, what would it be?
Fix everyone's problems.
Maybe go back and relive certain moments in our past, in our family life, because they're so precious. I'll go back and for an hour, recreate a time and do something really special.
Oh, I love that superpower. Sweet. Just relive a memory. That's like,
wow.
That's
great. That is really cool. That's a great answer.
That's a great one to think about in the present moment. I've said that with my husband just recently. We were like sitting on the kitchen floor with my son, and we were just like eating on the just having like a picnic on the kitchen floor. And I was like, this is a moment we're going to wish we could time travel to.
Yeah, like note your core memories as they're happening. Yes. Everybody remember this. This is a core memory.
Live as though you chose to be there.
Yeah.
Ben, what was your favorite movie as a kid?
The Truman Show.
Well, growing up, it's probably Little Big League.
Oh, that's okay. As like a really little kid.
what was your favorite toy as a child?
I would probably say Hot Wheels, cars. That was like my first obsession.
For some reason, he thought professional wrestling was pretty funny.
That is the other one.
And so we had we got him a little wrestling ring with guys, and he loved to wrestle with them. And so I know that was one of his favorite toys.
Yeah.
I don't think my mom and I have gotten one right. Like,
you got the favorite color.
Blue.
You got blue.
We got the color. Great.
Yeah, you got assertive, but that's okay. That's a tough one. But did your mom get the toy more right than you got it right?
I mean, both are The problem is that it's like what age, because it changes. So like my very first one was Cars, but when I was like 5 or 6, it was wrestling figures, and they also got us wrestling buddies, which were like pillows shaped like wrestlers that were the same size as us that we could kind of tackle instead of each other. I guess my brother was wrestling.
Yes, very smart.
Okay, what is your love language?
Touch.
I guess it's acts of service, because the thoughtfulness that he shows when he does something for somebody he loves.
Maybe it's different with different people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think
maybe it's not touch with
probably everybody. Probably that's the right answer. I didn't know you meant with Bob. Yes. So with the acts of service, sure.
Who is the one person living or dead that you would want to have a conversation with?
Oh my God. I think she either said John Lewis or Babe Ruth. It's going to be somebody political or sports. It has to be.
Okay.
He adored my father, his grandpa.
She went for sentimentality.
She goes sentimental.
Did you get it wrong? But you embarrassed us. You're embarrassing me. What's your mom's love language?
I think it's probably acts of service.
I don't know. I suppose a little bit of acts of service.
Great. Bam. Yes.
You did it.
You got a little bit of points. Awesome. And how would you finish this sentence? My mom is so blank.
Caring.
Oh.
Over-helpful. I don't know if you use that word, but over-helpful.
I love that she basically said what you said, but in a self-deprecating way.
Yeah, exactly. I'm giving you the points for that. I love it.
Ben, this is the end of Your Mom is a Podcast. How did you find it?
I really wasn't I knew a little bit of what to expect, but I am surprised. I'm surprised how emotionally affected I am hearing my mom talk about me growing up in these moments. It really makes me appreciate her more.
She's pretty cool.
And you're pretty cool too.
Thanks.
So thank you so much for being on here. I mean, honestly, if my kid is as civically minded as you, Ben, I feel like I'll be doing the right thing. This is awesome.
Yes, globally minded and caring in macro and micro ways. Great quality that we would love to bestow upon our children. Thanks for being a guest on our little podcast. It really means the world that we got some of your time.
Thank you so much for having
me. Congratulations on your show. We can't wait to check it out.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you.
Your Mom is a Podcast is hosted by Milana Weintraub and Sandeep Parikh. It is executive produced by Milana Weintraub, Sandeep Parikh, and Stephen Hine. Editing and sound design is by Sean Marr. Music by Matt Friedman. This podcast comes from F and Funny Productions and Story Mill Media. Be sure to follow the podcast on Instagram and TikTok at Your Mom is a Podcast.
Hello.
Hi, Mom. You're on the air on Your Mom is a Podcast.
Hello.
We got color correct. And I guess your love language is acts of service. And then there were two other things where I gave like the moderate answer and you gave the extreme answer, I think is how this went.
Okay.
But that was very interesting and nice hearing you talk about all the things that you and Dad did that I never really knew about or have appreciated until this moment.
Well,
what did he do?
Dad's in the background. He said, what did we do? What answer in particular? Did anything stand out?
I mean, I think the fact that you, when Dad took you on that vacation, you were mad at him for taking you away from me. But like, I think it's important to give time for yourselves to have a good marriage.
And we do. But at that time, I was working such long hours that any minute or hour I had free, I wanted to be with you. And I think there are a lot of parents who can relate to that. But on the other hand, being together is important too. You know, there's a book that's called How to Stay Two When Baby Makes Three, which I had read.
I think that's the one you mentioned on the pod.
Mm-hmm. And so I think it must have worked because we're still together.
Going strong. I want to say, not to date you guys, but you're at 41 years?
Mm-hmm. Plus, yeah.
41.
Yeah. And how many miles?
Clark Street.
41 and a half.
41 and a half.
The future of cool, comfortable sleep is here. Introducing the new Sleep Number Climate Cool Smart Bed. The only smart bed in the world that actively cools and effortlessly adjusts to both of you. Sleep up to 15 degrees cooler on each side. It actively cools to keep you cool and comfortable throughout the night. Save on smart beds now during our fall sale, exclusively at a Sleep Number store near you. Learn more at sleepnumber.com.